ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, फर्स्ट ऑफ ऑल आई वांट टू थैंक यू फॉर लेटिंग मी स्पीक फ्रॉम ऑल ऑफ यू. आई गॉट टू टेल यू दैट आफ्टर आवर लास्ट विजिट, दैट वाज आवर फर्स्ट विजिट टू दिस वंडरफुल टेम्पल. Wherever we've been, Mayapur and so many girl brothers and friends in Vrindavan, we've been telling the glories of your temple to everyone. And we really feel very happy and grateful to be with all of you. When we came last time, of course, we have visited India before, but when we came this previous time, when I came to your temple, I had a very tiny realization. I was thinking that most of the people, most of the local people, might think that this Radha Gopinath temple is a temple of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in Mumbai. And yes, that's right. But in reality, this temple is part of the spiritual world. And I felt it very strongly in my heart. So, of course, all of you know, but I'm just telling you how I felt it very strongly in my heart. So we've been reading about the downfall of Shobari Muni. And this is a very wonderful story. We're almost to the end. Sakadashi Dupashina Atma Panavang Atmana Dadarsha Bhava Ruchario Mina Sangha Samutitam. Mantras was sitting in a secluded place. He thought to himself about the cause of his fall down, which was simply that he had associated himself with the sexual affairs of the fish. Let's repeat. Thereafter, one day while Shobari Muni, who was expert in chanting mantras, was sitting in a secluded place, he thought to himself about the cause of his fall down, which was simply that he had associated himself with the sexual affairs of the fish. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Visvanatha Chakravarti Thakur remarks that Shobari Muni had fallen from his austerity because of Vaishnava aparad. The history is that when Garuda wanted to eat fish, Shobari Muni unnecessarily gave the fish shelter under his care. Because Garuda's plans for eating were disappointed, Shobari Muni certainly committed a great offense to a Vaishnava. Because of this Vaishnava aparadha, an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, Shobari Muni fell from his exalted position of mystic tapasya. One should not, therefore, impede the activities of a Vaishnava. This is the lesson we must learn from this incident concerning Shobari Muni. We are almost at the conclusion of this story, the Shaubari Muni. There is several points on this history of Shaubari Muni. First, we can understand by reading from Srimad Bhagavatam that he was not an ordinary yogi. Why? Because he had reached some perfection. If we go underwater, for how long can we hold our breath, even if we try hard? So he was able to control his breath and engage in meditation. And then another important point to consider is that he was not in an ordinary river, but he had chosen the Yamuna River. And also, this Shaubari Muni, later on, we will see almost at the end of the chapter that after all this affair happened, after he got married, he got his taste of trying to enjoy all the material facilities. When he went back to the forest, he was able, according to Srila Prabhupada, to concentrate at the time of death. He was able to concentrate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he went back home, back to Godhead. So this doesn't happen just by chance. So also this on the last purport that we read, Srila Biswanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining that his fall down was due to aparad, to Vaishnava aparad. Several years ago, I believe it was like 5 years ago, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj came to Alachua and he gave the most wonderful and extensive class about Vaishnava aparad. He went and gave us step by step all the subtle intricacies of Vaishnava aparad and the different ways how we commit Vaishnava aparad. He was stating that usually one of the forms that we all commit Vaishnava aparad is by criticizing our God brothers or God sisters. And then I do remember he was saying also that one of the most difficult forms of Vaishnava aparad is not to criticize someone who, according to our vision, is wrong. So he was saying that in our dealings, we might think that that person is not acting according to the principles of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and then we feel that we are right. So to not criticize that person is very difficult. So in the life of Shaubari Muni, we can see how when he was under the water, he was able to see these fish engaging on their sexual activities. And then his mind became attracted to material sense enjoyment. So this Krishna consciousness movement, it's what is giving us the strength to be able to be aloof from material activities, from material attraction. Srila Prabhupada, in our days, it's very common to think in modern society that whatever science or the scientists claim to be the truth, people follow blindly. But this science of Krishna consciousness has defined by Srila Prabhupada. I was quoting this morning to my god brother when we were talking outside the temple, how Srila Prabhupada, one of the definitions of this Krishna consciousness is that Krishna consciousness is the science by one we can become immortal. So much technology, so much science, even the scientists, they've been claiming for the last 30, 40 years that they were going to be able to solve hunger in the world. And now they have come with this type of seeds, these gene-modified seeds, MGO seeds, by which they are still claiming after 30, 40 years that they are going to be able to solve the hunger problem in the world, when in reality, it's just the opposite. And all this knowledge, all this technology and all this knowledge cannot even cure some of the most common diseases like cold or and as soon as they find a cure, like now they are curing some of the cancer, some other type of disease appears that becomes very complex and very difficult to really find a solution. But how to solve the real problem of the world? How to get out of this material entanglement is offered by the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as Krishna consciousness, or how to become immortal and then forget about all this birth, disease, old age, and death. So we know that Chaubari Muni was a transcendentalist, but due to his offenses, he once again engaged in material activities. And it says today on this chapter that he was very expert in chanting mantras. So whoever is after material enjoyment, they all know they have to work so hard, and the process is there. But Chaubari Muni, a mystic yogi, he used all of the result of his activities for so many years and the chanting of his mantras, he was able to get 50 wives in this beautiful place where all the amenities for sense gratifications were there. Of course, most of you are single and brahmacharis. So, but I can tell you, to be married to one wife sometimes can be very difficult. What to speak of 50 wives? So, when I'm reading about Chaubari Muni, such an exalted personality dealing with 50 wives, that is real a problem. And it says on the Bhagavatam that right away they were sisters, right away they start fighting among each other, and they forgot that they were sisters. And you cannot really imagine all the problems that Chaubari Muni might have had. To the point that he said, "That's it, I'm finished, I'm going back to the forest." And so that he did. I'm coming from a different background, a different culture. And people also has the idea that just by following, just by working hard, just by getting some material knowledge, you can really enjoy this material existence. But the Western countries, they have been for many, many years, they have been able to supply to his citizens all the facilities for material enjoyment. And are they happy? No, they are not happy. And so some extremes are there. Nitai Prasad Prabhu was asking me to give class, and I was saying, so many wonderful devotees, because I have heard some of you giving these wonderful classes, and I was feeling a little humble to come here and sit in front of all of you. But then Prabhuji was saying, but maybe you could relate some of your experience in Krishna consciousness. And that, yes, I can do. I can tell you that myself, I was born into a family that it had all the material facilities. I was the only son, and my mother was providing whatever facilities she had. You know, we had servants, maid servants, and I always attended private colleges, schools. But from very young age, as far as I can remember, when I was around 5 or 6 years old, I had this very strong feeling of religiosity in my heart. And I was born like a Catholic. And so I remember in the month of May, they all have these ceremonies for the Virgin Mary. And I used to lead the chanting of the prayers myself. And so I was growing up. And then through the years, I do remember this void in my heart. This void in my heart that at one point I could not understand exactly what was the cause. Then when I was around 11 or 13 years old, one of my favorite things was to go on the rooftop of my house at night and lay down, and just by looking to the stars and the moon on the sky, I used to cry. I used to cry because I was feeling really void in my heart. And I could feel the presence of the Lord. And I was really praying to the Lord, "My Lord, please be present before me. My dear Lord, I don't know where you are." Even that the Lord was next to me in my heart, I was praying to the Lord like that. "My Lord, please let me know of you." Then I went into the secondary school. I went to a Catholic secondary school. And we used to go to church every day before classes. I do remember the first day of school, one of the priests was a young priest. He came and he gave us a speech before class to everyone. And then he was explaining how the Buddhist monks, I never heard about yoga, I never heard about Sanatana Dharma. So the first time I heard this priest talking, how the Buddhist monks they were able to storage knowledge in their minds by organizing their minds like yours, that and they will label the different type of knowledge. So when they needed to refer to this knowledge in their mind, they will go to that specific jar and being able to pull out all this knowledge. To me, it was really fantastic. I say, oh my God, I never heard something about it. So that day, I wait for the priest to finish his speech. And then I approach him and I told him that I wanted to become a priest, that I wanted to dedicate my life to God. And then the priest looked at me and he said, you are just a little boy. He said, so it's very nice that you have that type of feelings in your heart. But later on, he said, you can go to a monastery or a seminary and then you could become a priest. But right now, he said, you're just a little boy. Of course, later on, when I was 15, 16, I started reading books about yoga. And a natural attraction was there. So also in my country, there is a poet, very famous poet, that he was influenced by Bhagavad Gita. So all of his poetry, it was based on spirituality. So I really love to hear his poetry. But because also beside the spiritual part, sometimes he will express political views, criticizing the government, most of his poetry was prohibited. And like he had one book that was called in Spanish is El Dinero Maldito. That will be the money that is poison, poison money. And then on his book, he was criticizing how the government was creating all these liquors and wines to sell to the people that was causing so much suffering, and then using that money to create schools and to maintain schools. So the government didn't like that, and so they prohibited most of his books. Then I was able to find a copy of Bhagavad Gita in Spanish, very bad translation of Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada would have not liked it. And I was trying to read and understand, and it was very vague, very hard to understand. But what I wanted to tell you, what I wanted to convey to all of you, is that I had a very strong desire to meet the Lord, to find the Lord. And then my country is a tiny country in south of Mexico. It's the United States, Mexico, and then the tiny countries of Central America. So my country is El Salvador, very small country. And I can tell you that people don't go there because it's an unimportant country. But I had this very strong desire. I became a vegetarian on my own just by reading a poetry book. And this poet was saying that we must become vegetarians, and he didn't give any reason why, and I became a vegetarian. And then one day in 1971, one devotee came. And so that reminds, you know, Jasya Prashadam, Bhagavat Prashadam, Jasya Prashadam Nagati Kutopi, that by the will of the Lord, when the spirit soul is wanting to meet the Lord, he sent the spiritual master of his representative. So by 1971, I'm reading the newspaper, And I see that this devotee who was visiting from Mexico, he was a Canadian devotee. He had come to my country and he was going to present a lecture on Bhagavad Gita. So right away I jump up, run to I'm sorry if I'm, I don't know if I have repeated some of this story before when I was here, but I went and I woke up my best friend and I said, Sadhu is here, a yogi is here, and he's going to speak on Bhagavad Gita, so we should go. So we went for that conference, and also I never heard the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And that one day, when the devotee came, he was a Swami. His name was Hanuman Maharaj. He came, he sat, and he started chanting the Maha Mantra. And so that first time that I heard the mantra, to me, to explain it to you, I will say that was like a thunderbolt that hit me. The power of the mantra in my heart really shake me. I could not explain really the power of the mantra because I had no knowledge of the spiritual science of bhakti yoga. But I felt all of my being really like awakened to that quest that I had for spiritual enlightenment. And right away I started chanting. There was probably 50, 60 people also. And I start chanting right away. And then after the devotees finish the lecture, I went and I start inquiring about the Supreme Lord and the science of Bhakti Yoga. So I became friends with the devotees. I be friendly the devotees. And for 3-4 days, they stay. And then the Maharaj, he told me, he said, I'm going back to Mexico, but I'll be back in 1 month. If you want, you can come with us, or you can wait. Because back then, the only temple was in South America. South America, Mexico, Central and South America is a big continent. But there was no devotees, only in Mexico City. And so I said, because I was still going to college, to the university, I told the devotee, I'll wait. If it's only 1 month, I'll wait and I'll be here. When you come back, you know how to contact me, and then I'll join the movement. So myself, I consider a devotee, even though I didn't know most of the prayers or most of the philosophy, I really didn't know. Back then, there was only a pamphlet in Spanish, 2-page pamphlet. And whatever was there, I would explain to my friends. With my other friend, we used to go to the Central Park. And my friend got a very small, tiny cartels. And we would sit in a park and chant the Maha Mantra. And so people would walk by. Some of them would ask, what are you guys doing? And we would preach a little bit. You know, oh, this is the Maha Mantra, and we're worshiping the Supreme Lord Krishna. And Lord Krishna had a very close friend, Arjuna. And so to him, he spoke the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. And this knowledge has been in India for thousands of years. But besides that, there was not much more that we could explain. But it was enough for people, you know, they felt satisfied. Oh, that's very nice. And some of them would sit and chant with us. So we will do it sporadically, you know, 2-3 times a week. We're still going to college. And so I consider myself a devotee. Also, when the sun will come out in the morning, I will go out of my house and I will chant the Maha Mantra for 5 minutes or so. When the sun went down, also I will come and chant, you know, to the Lord. And I feel very satisfied. I will feel I'm a full-time devotee. But my life continued. I was vegetarian. And And then a few years went by, but in my life, still, being a young boy, 18, 19 year old, the attraction to the material world is strong. I really felt that I needed the association of the devotees. And whatever devotional activity that I learned from the devotee I was doing, but I still, I was hankering for more knowledge, association. And then I still was going to the university and I was studying psychology. So one day, I was relating to Prabhuji yesterday also, that one day this professor, he was considered the most learned professor. He will give classes to at least 500 students. I happened to know him because he was the uncle of my best friend. So this day he's giving this class, and in this class he's saying the knowledge of psychology is always changing. And whatever you're learning now is going to be useless in 5 years. So in 5 years, whatever you're learning here, you're going to relearn once again the new techniques, the new discoverings of science to be able to keep up in helping your patients. And that struck me in my heart. I said, what type of knowledge is this that is considered knowledge now and was not considered knowledge in the past and is not going to be considered knowledge in the future? I said, this type of knowledge I don't want. And besides that, besides being a big scholar from Monday to Friday, from Friday evening and the weekend, he was a drunkard. And because he was the uncle of my best friend, so sometimes when I was going with my friend to his house, he happened to live with my best friend. Sometimes we will find him laying on the street, completely drunk, like any other drunkard on the street. And we will, wake him up and bring him to the house. So that also I was saying, is that the type of person? That type of person I don't want to be. So I decide on my own to give up my university. Of course, my mother almost had a heart attack. And my friends, they were also thinking that something went wrong in my head. It was a different time. I know that most of you have your degrees. But back then, devotees were encouraging everyone to don't pursue material knowledge, just become full-time devotee. Even that I didn't have much association with the devotees, I think that came on my own. And I said, no, I'm renouncing school, I'm renouncing the university, I'm not going anymore. So, like I say, my friends, they were thinking that, not my close friend, but my other friends from school. I always had very good grades, excellent grades, so they were thinking that something was wrong in my head. And almost at the same time, I was playing basketball. I played all of my high school time, and I played 2 years of university. Because I never smoke, I never drink, I never took drugs. Physically, I was, very strong and young. So I started questioning if I was wasting my time. Really, I was doing it. But one day, we had the last game of the season. I used to play only half time because everyone was older than me. So, but I had, some ability, so usually I was playing like halftime. And then we had this game, and we were playing the champions from the previous season. And we had studied the way how they were playing, and we were practicing how to stop them. And so that we did. So on the last 5 minutes of the game, the coach called me and he said, "You're going in." He said, "We have the tallest player in all of the, among all of the teams." He was very, very tall. He said, "This is very simple what we're going to do. Every time they throw the ball and they miss," he said, "you, the tall, you're going to grab that ball. You're going to throw that ball and you're going to run. You grab that ball, no one is going to reach you and you score." So we did it twice. And then, you know, when I scored the second, we went up for 2 points and we win. And so everyone, you know, were so jumping up and down. And then they came, they grabbed me on their shoulders, you know, and they took me all around, you know. And I had never felt so bad in my life. I was feeling stupid. I'm sorry to say the word. But I was feeling like a fool. Everyone was saying, "Oh, you did this and we won. And, you know, and so we're champions for this year." And I'm thinking, this is not what I want in my life. So that day, I decide I'm not going to play anymore. So I stopped going. And after 2 weeks, the coach came to my house and he said, "What is it with you? Are you okay?" And I said, "Yes, I'm fine." "I was thinking you were sick." And he said, "No, no, I'm fine. How is that you're not coming to practice?" And I said, "Sir, I'm really looking for spiritual knowledge. And all these sports activities is simply a waste of time." He looked at me and he said, "You're mad. You're completely mad." And I said, "No, sir, I'm not." A week later, another devotee came to this insignificant country. Another devotee from Canada came. He just went to Panama. He did some preaching programs there, and then he came by land and stopped in El Salvador and visit some of my friends who had a yoga club. So he was staying with them. And this friend used to come, you know, because in my apartment I was sleeping on the floor. I was eating only fruits. And I had a little picture of Lord Krishna that I offered a little flower and a little incense every day. So they used to come and try to get me to come to their yoga club to practice some of their hatha yoga. So one day I decide I'm going to go and pay a visit to my friends. And when I walk in, the first thing I see at the van, at the back of the room, there was a small altar with a Panchatattva frame picture. And I said, "Oh my God." When my friends came, I said, "That's Lord Krishna." And they said, "Yes, we have a Hare Krishna devotee here." And I said, "Oh, I want to meet him." So I go and I start talking to the Prabhu. Now he lives in Alachua. And he started preaching to me right away. And he said, "You know, I need another place because I'm telling these Prabhus that his guru is a Coca-Cola Nanda guru and a Sadhu Lado, and they want me to move out." So I said, "Yeah, I have one place. If you want, you can come and stay with me." So he came, he opened the door, he said, "Oh, you sleep in the floor, you have Lord Krishna there." So that night, we had a Bhagavad Gita class. I'll invite all of my friends. Most of my friends were vegetarians from art school, you know, musicians and students of theater and pottery. So like 20 of my friends came, and then we had the first Bhagavad Gita class. And big kirtan, you know, some little prasadam. And then all that night, Prabhu preached to me until probably 5 a.m. next day. And then I was able to see. I was able to see, and I remember telling myself, the devotee fell asleep while he was preaching to me. It was 5 a.m. All night he was preaching. And then the sun was coming up, and I was able to see. I said, this is it. You know, forget all the search. Forget all the different studies. This is what I need. This is what I gotta live my life for. And that very day, I start chanting 6 rounds. Next day, 12 rounds. And next day, 16 rounds. And by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we're still here chanting the same mantra with a very happy heart. So I'm going to conclude the little speech. If there is a question, very gladly will answer. Hare Krishna. I think I told you most of my Prabhupada stories last time. But I can tell you this, there is a very sweet story. Now in Vrindavan, after 35 years, I met a god brother that I had not seen for 35 years. And we went together to see Srila Prabhupada in Mexico. And after being with Srila Prabhupada for 1 week, we traveled to Mexico, every single town and village for 6 months, doing book distribution and Harinam. And then we went our own ways. He went to Argentina and Brazil, and I stay in Central America preaching, opening temples like that. But this devotee, he went to Buenos Aires, Argentina, and he became a head pujari. And then they had a beautiful, small, probably around this size, Gornetai Diris. And he was worshiping them every day, every day. And back then, there was a military regiment in Argentina, very heavy. There was a lot of killing going on all over the country. So this devotee, he's worshiping Gornetai, and one night he puts them to rest. This is a real story. And he goes to bed, tired of for the day. And then at night, he has this wonderful dream. Gornitai, the two of them, came to wherever he was sleeping in his dream. And they are telling him, take us out of here immediately. Right now, you go to the altar, grab us, put us on a bundle and take us out of here this very minute. He wakes up and he's, you know, sweating. He's sweating and says, oh my God, I just had this dream. And Gornita is telling me that I should take them out of here. And it's like 2 a.m. in the morning, everyone's sleeping in a temple. And then, of course, you know, he's a little confused. Should I do it? Should I not do it? No, this is craziness. No, I should not do it. But then he said in his heart, he's had suddenly this very strong conviction came. The Lord told me to take them out of here. I'm going to take them out of here. He ran to the shower. He had a very fast shower. He put a dhoti and a chada, ran into the altar, grabbed the deities of Gornitai, you know, using some chadars and some clean cloth, wrapped them into a big bundle, ran to the train station, and took the first train out of the country. He took them to Brazil. Of course, can you imagine what happened when the devotees assembled at 4:30 a.m. for Mongolarti? Right? Hey, where is this pujari? Is he sleeping? Where is he? And after 10 minutes, someone has the idea to go and open the curtains. And when they open the curtains, Gornitai is not here. And then they say, where is the head pujari? And they go and look for the head pujari. There's no Gornitai Diris. there's no help, Puyari. And then, you know, everyone started happening, speculating. He went mad. He stole the deities. What a rascal. What are we going to do? They start calling the GVC in America. What should we do? And then by 5 a.m., the doors of the temple, you know, open up. And the police and the most repressive guard from the army, from the government, came inside the temple and start beating the devotees and start breaking everything inside the temple, grab the books, set the books on fire. And of course, they went to the altar because they already knew and start breaking the pictures, the parampara pictures, and destroying whatever was there. And so you can see how the Lord himself, Gaur Nitai himself, gave that order to his sleeping devotee to take them out, because otherwise they would have broken the deities too. So I wanted to share with all of you this wonderful story. And sometimes there is some rasa between the deity and the puyari. And sometimes the Lord, even in our present days, the Lord communicates with the puyari. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.